Does your computer repair business need a website, but you don't have any experience and not a whole lot of money? Check out Tech Site Builder 2. Save 20% by going to techsitebuilder.com/Linux.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux the Rest of Us, episode 134. This is a show about Linux, news, tips, hardware, software talks, anything that sort of tickles our Linux fancy we bring to the show. I, of course, am Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop. And here with me this week is Rambo Obando, also known as Martin, to his friends. How's it going, Martin?
It's going really good, Cody. It's great to be back on the show and hang out with you and talk about some Linux-ness. Is that a word?
It is now. It's
Linux-ness.
One might say it's a Dorism.
I'm getting a bumper sticker.
There we go. Dor is actually on vacation this week. He is bearing Disney World with his family on Memorial Day weekend. That is quite the obstacle, so I wish him luck. And today, May 24th, is Dor's birthday. Happy birthday, Dor.
Happy birthday, Dor.
And that is now on record in the audio for anyone that wants to wish him a happy birthday in the future. May 24th, everybody, May 24th.
May the 24th be with him?
That's it.
That's it.
Works for me.
I like it. Get a bumper sticker. That's my new catchphrase.
Martin, I know now, for those of you who haven't heard of Martin before, Martin, would you give us a quick overview of who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure. I run a company called Obando Computing. I do kind of small, mid-sized business, managed services. So if they need IT support, and don't have the finances to either have somebody on site full-time, or they just want somebody to come in, talk to them about what's going on, and go from there, that's what I do, located up in the Pacific Northwest.
And a common practice in the Pacific Northwest is trading services. And I have a feeling that based on Martin's plugs, he's recently traded services with someone who manufactures bumper stickers.
No. But I'm hoping. No. I'm always on the lookout.
Okay.
So if any listeners out there, maybe we can make a trade.
I got to remember that. Okay. Thank you, Martin. And thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on the show. And we will have you back anytime we can because you were an awesome guest last time. And you're also affiliated with another podcast with your on there regularly. Would you like to plug that while you're here?
Yeah. I host or co-host and one of the guys from Geeksters. So Tuesdays, we go live Tuesday afternoon, 3:30 Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. Yeah, Geeksters with Mitch and lost names there.
Mitch the Gentleman Heyman.
Tim, and like Tim Bauermeister. You see him in the Podnuts forums a lot. He's there. Mm-hmm. Fred, PC Freddy, he's there. So yeah, and Eric. Eric shows up every now and then. He's been kind of busy.
Yep, Eric Gardini from Android App Addicts.
Yeah, but it's a great show. We just talk about just general geekness.
It is a good show. And yeah, please add that to your feed. Check it out. They got a lot of good content on those shows. And you might just see my mug gracing their presence soon.
We hope so. We should get your mug on there.
I will. I totally will. All right. This week, the basic, know your community. But more importantly, this is more twofold. Know your community, one. Not only reach out to those who might be like-minded as far as what distro you're using, or just, fans of a podcast. For instance, you can see who follows us on Google+ and potentially have a good conversation strike up with those people. You know, if Dor or I or Martin post something, you can see who's responding, leaving comments. Because you never know what kind of relationships are going to sprout from those little interactions. I've had the privilege of meeting some listeners at two different Linux fests and have since carried on many conversations with them since. And met many good people online that I hope to meet in person in the future. But more importantly, if you have any Linux user groups or local lugs, anything within driving distance, I would suggest trying to go to them. Because from what I understand, they're beneficial. And from what I understand, I say that because I have yet to actually go to one. I live in a small town north of Eugene, Oregon. And when I first moved here was when I first started to kind of investigate Linux about 7 years ago. and there happened to be a Linux user group in my area, at least advertised at the time, and I had found out that they had literally just stopped doing meetings the month before I moved there. So, but I'm right near Oregon State University. They have an open source lab there. I'm going to be touching base with some of their members soon, and possibly getting some good content out of it. So if you haven't investigated what kind of options you have as far as lugs, do so. Martin, do you have any experience going to any local user groups?
I don't. I've met some of the local people at different conferences. You know, we got some big ones up here, like OSCON is up here, and Open Source Bridge. And so I've actually talked to some of the people who are members of that, but I've never made it down there. It's not that I don't want to. It's a time commitment. Usually it's on a weekday night, and trying to get into the city and then back out of the city at a decent time with family, it doesn't always work out that well. So I haven't made it to. I know that there used to be kind of an online one through kind of Mumble that people would participate in, and I'm hoping that maybe that comes back up and I can start getting involved in that. But I just have not made it to a local one yet.
Okay. Well, I live, and Martin and I are also within close proximity of each other. We only live about 90 minutes apart. So I'll commit to this, Martin. If you want to, sometime in the future, no specific date involved, if you want to go to like one of the bigger Portland lugs, I'll go with you.
There we go. Sure.
And we'll report on it.
Maybe do a live show from the Portland lug.
Why wouldn't we? That sounds great. Well, we could at least get, well, if we're going to ride in the same car, we could do like a mobile, you know, before and after, kind of, this is what we're anticipating, this is what we got. You know what I mean?
That's right.
I think that'd be fun.
Well, one person's to drive and the other person's to talk.
There you go.
Who's holding the wheel? I don't know.
I don't know. We're both in the back seat. We don't have a pilot, let alone a co-pilot.
Maybe we'll get Fred to come and drive for us.
There you go.
Being a pilot at all.
That sounds good. I don't know how much it would take to get him there, but we could get a Kickstarter going or something. Or an Indiegogo for our international listeners who really want to hear us in a car driving to a lug and have Fred at the wheel. Okay. Anyway, yeah, know your community. Reach out and start to build these relationships, because you never know where they're going to lead. You never know who's used that piece of software, who's ran into that same problem, who is just also starting to use that distro, yada, yada, yada. Many different things to be gained from like experiences and good people. So definitely reach out there. And on that note, thank you to people who have been adding me on Google+. I've been getting a lot of good feedback and starting some really good conversations on there. So please keep that up. Do not hesitate. And Martin's also on Google+. Hit him up at Martin Obando at Obando Computing.
Yeah.
All right. We're just going to delve right into the topics here. First of all, Ubuntu 13.04, still fairly new. The Raring Ringtail. You hear a lot of mixed emotions and mixed feelings on it. And not only on it, but when a distro first comes out with a new release, there's always going to be little hiccups. Whether it's on specific hardware, or it's because of it's an LTS, or if it's bleeding edge, you know, there's many different factors in this. And I ran into this issue, and it's not a big deal for me, essentially, because I'm not completely reliant on Chrome. But, and I didn't even know it was a known issue until today when I found out it was actually fixed. People were having trouble installing Chrome on 13.04. There was a variety of errors which would make it impossible, either through the Ubuntu Software Center or just getting the dev package straight from Google. Martin, did you run into this as well? Because now that I read about the fix, I think I heard you mention that when you and I were talking about some of the issues you had when you first were installing it.
It was. I'm a heavy Chrome user. I move from computer to computer, and so it just makes it very easy for me to keep that all in sync. Yeah, I did. You had to kind of install a prepackage, kind of just an extra repository, and then you had to do some, you know, there were walkthroughs. So it made it easy to follow step, you know, 1, 2, 3 to fix it, but it wasn't just straight out of the box, sudo apt-get, you know, and go from there. But I did get it installed, and I'm glad to see that it's been resolved and fixed, because I think having a browser not working right is kind of a big hiccup for a distro.
It is, especially arguably the most popular browser. And for me, because I ran 13.04 on my laptop for about a week and a half, and then I got rid of it. I was just like, well, I tried that for now. Maybe I'll revisit in the future. Just went back to 12.04. But even as you say, it was a small hurdle. And what happened with me was, is I got it. I was like, okay, well, I can't install Chrome. I tried another way. I was like, okay, I'm just going to use Firefox then. Because I knew that I wasn't going to be keeping the installation on there for very long, and I just needed to do general stuff. But yes, this is also kind of a wake-up call, because for you, you say you like to use Chrome. You're hopping on different machines.
Yeah.
But what I would warn people is don't become too reliant on certain pieces of software that have many alternatives. You know, to try to make yourself familiarize yourself with the alternatives, just in case. I mean, this came up recently, unfortunately, in this case, with another Google product, Google Reader, and different things have popped up about that. And we've discussed that in the past. I'm not trying to dredge up, you know, old feelings here, but don't become super reliant on one solution if you can help it. And I'm glad to see this is fixed, because if someone were trying Linux or Ubuntu for the first time, and even though it's a somewhat of a small hurdle, that can still be the one thing that just makes them put their hands up and go, I'm done. If I can't even install a browser, what's the point? You know? So I'm glad to see that they resolved this issue. And I tried installing it right from the software center. It went fine. And I also tried installing it today, because I have 13.04 on another box, downloading the dev right from Google, and it installed fine. So that issue is now resolved.
Cool, so they did fix those packages. Yeah, I ran 13.04 for a couple days. I'm not a big Unity fan, so I always kicked it back to like a fallback mode. And it didn't, you know, and it was fine. I got it fixed and working, but it wasn't a big fan of it. And then went ahead, like you, moved back to 12.04. Mm-hmm. But I have a second hard drive that I put in, so I'll put another hard drive in, mess with it, tweak with it, and never really feel like I've lost my grip to my stable system, because if I don't like it, I pull the hard drive out, put the new one back in, or the old one back in, turn my computer back on, and it's like, you know, my comfy shoes.
Yep. That's what I do, and I've spoken to this before on several occasions. I have that similar setup in my desktop machine. However, I just have many drives in the tray, and I just unplug the same SATA power and data cables, you know, depending on if I want to boot into Windows for whatever reason, which is, I can't remember the last time I did it, honestly. I'm getting ready to wipe that drive and take back that 500 gigs. But if you have the ability to do native hardware installations for testing or just to play around, that is sort of the next step beyond testing in a VM, in my opinion, and that's a good way to do it, too.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. All right, what do we got here, Martin?
So this week, I was, you know, there are times when you know, you're living in a city or you're living in the area there, and you kind of go, oh my goodness, why did they, you know, do that? This week, it's yesterday, made me smile. I'm not a big Drupal user. It's something I want to learn how to do. I just haven't done it. But as we all know, this last week, you know, Oklahoma took a big hit. Our nation took a big hit. Huge tornadoes, lots of destruction. Well, DrupalCon ends today. But DrupalCon up here in Portland was all week long, and 70 developers that were there took time away from what they were doing, their presentations, their developing, and they all got together and did kind of an all-night hackathon, and they came up with a great, great website. It's called help4ok.org, so it's H-E-L-P, the number 4, ok.org, and this is a great site where people can come together and say, I need a house, I need a ride, I can give a ride, I can, you know, I can give someplace to, you know, someplace for somebody to live. So these people just got together and just did what open source does. They take care of each other, and they made a great website. It's just, they worked with FEMA on it, and it's gone live, and people are using it. So I was just so impressed, and just, I sat back in just amazement and just awe of how that people just decided, you know what, we're going to do it. And they did it, and it's working, and it's in place, and it made me really feel good for that.
No, this is, and I mean, it would be one thing for just some Drupal people or just a small member of this community to get together and make this, but these guys were at an event, and they still took the time to collectively get together and do this, and that, it, to me, is above and beyond. So to take their time and to make something like this. Now, I'm looking at it just on my desktop because I don't have my phone turned on, but the formatting for this site looks as if it would also show up really well on mobile. which you got to think, if you just lost your house, you're not logging on to your desktop to go to helpforok.org to get some help. You're probably on your phone.
Right.
And that is another great aspect of this project. And yeah, it's very, very simple. It's not, it's just a big four button interface, very, very nice and clean. And I would be interested to hear some more success stories on this in the future, because if you can have something quick like this to implement in case of another crisis, you know, not that I want to see a crisis happen to test it, but having something like this sort of in the back pocket to get people up and going, because we've unfortunately in this environment we've had similar disasters happen where help didn't get to people for days.
Yeah.
So yeah, anything to get help faster would be great.
Yeah, there's a great, we'll have the link in the show notes, but there's a great kind of behind the scenes, how they did it and what they went through, kind of the planning stage and throwing stuff up on a whiteboard. It's a YouTube video, and it was, it's about 6.5 minutes long, and it's really good just to kind of see the heart and the passion behind it. Not just, like you said, not just three people getting together around a table doing it, but 70 people sitting around, you know, working out, what's it going to look like? How's it going to do? It's really easy just to throw up a web page, but what about all the behind the scenes stuff? You know, it talks about how to do stuff. There's payment features. I mean, how do you coordinate to get a ride with somebody? You know, how do you do all that stuff? How do you log in? Where's the authentication system? So I kind of briefly went through the website, and it's just a, you know, it's a great, and the bottom of the website says developed by the participants of DrupalCon 2013. So it's not just, hey, you know, user made this. It's a collective, and they're proud of that, and they're posting it. And I think this may be this may be a great kind of foundation for, like you said, for any other disasters happening. Like, you know, what if we did this? Or just a great format or a great model. I mean, you could completely take this thing and make it help for, you know, OR.
Yep.
And you know, if a natural disaster happens somewhere. So it's just I'm proud. I'm proud to be a Pacific, you know, Northwesterner, and to see this come out of a free and open source community up here.
Yeah, definitely a very cool project. And so something I'm sure that will blossom and be available for such disasters in the future if they were to ever happen.
Yeah.
Cool. Good bring up there. And yeah, not only the fact, like I said earlier, that it happened at DrupalCon, but it happened, you know, right in our backyard.
Right.
So to speak. Very cool. All right. Now, I have been promising, basically myself more than you people, that I'm going to buy a Raspberry Pi. And I keep saying, yeah, man, it's a good idea. It's only this much. And then I'd be like, yeah, okay. But then I get, you know, caught up in another project or some other thing comes up, and I put it off and put it off and put it off and put it off. I'm finally ordering my Pi tonight. Today's payday, one of my paydays, and I'm going to order it tonight. And I'm going to order the awesome Raspberry Pi case from Cook Tech Inc., that is Cook Technologies Incorporated. They sell the metal cases on eBay. So if you're looking for a case for your Pi, go to eBay, go to search, then advanced, and search for Cook Tech Inc. That's COOKTECHINC. The reason, because I really want one, just because there's so many cool little projects popping up all over the place, and another one was posted today, which I had to share. Fedora is making a specific spin for the Raspberry Pi. It's called PiDora, and they have had a team working on an ARM-based distribution for a while, so this fit very, very well. And it's going to be PiDora will not run GNOME 3, obviously, because of the lower powered hardware, but it'll be running my desktop environment of choice currently, XFCE. So I'm really looking forward to having this be one of the things that I slap on there first. Do you have a Raspberry Pi, Martin?
I don't. And, you know, we were just talking before the show about what, you know, if there's something I should get or something like that. And, you know, you've thrown down the gauntlet saying that if I'm going to do a lug, you're going to come up with me. So I'm going to throw down the gauntlet and say, let's buy two Pis together. Hand in hand. Pi Brothers.
There you go. Pi Brothers. We could even make it a bumper sticker out of it.
Pi Brothers.
There we go.
Pie. There's a Sherry's across the street, so I don't know. That's maybe a Pacific Northwest thing, but Sherry's Pie.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. For those of you who don't know, and this is just ignorance on our behalf collectively, because I don't know if Sherry's is a big national chain, but think of like a sit-down restaurant, just, you know, just like a basic restaurant, but they really heavily advertise their pies. But I rarely get dessert. I used to go there a lot when I was in high school. Like, hey, I'm going to go get a burger like with my friends after school or whatever, you know, like late night. And then we get kicked out because we were too rowdy or whatever. But
they have like free pie Wednesdays.
What?
You didn't know that? If you order a meal, well, that's what I hear. I don't go there often either.
Yeah, but yeah, only every Wednesday.
Right, only. I don't go there very often, about once a week. But I guess if you ordered a meal, you get free pie. Not like the whole thing. Slice of pie. Let me rephrase that.
Oh, okay.
So you're going to be walking out with your own pie.
So you get some pie.
Okay. You get some pie, not full pie.
All right. Well, yeah, that's great. Yeah, let's commit to buying a pie together, not at Sherry's, but a Raspberry Pi.
Maybe, what if we ate, anyways.
We should do like our unboxing at a Sherry's.
Eating Raspberry Pi.
There we go.
All right.
Well, we'll get back to you on that. I'm going to order my pie tonight and the case as well. And we will keep you up to date on what happens. Also, because there are so many cool... I mean, obviously, if you guys haven't heard of the pie, you haven't heard of the pie, whatever. But there are so many cool things, not only that you can do software-wise, but they also have the physical camera extension now. There's all sorts of different physical things that you can do with it. There's little supercomputers being built from it. Amazing device. I just can't wait to finally have one and be able to mess with it. So,
I want to do a media center. That's what I want to do.
We have, here's my thought, right? Here's my initial thought of what I'm going to do with Pi. I can't remember if I talked about this on my Podnuts Daily episode or anyway, with my desk at home, I mount, underneath, hard drives and other, items like I have my cable management system. It's all underneath my desk, physically underneath the surface of my desk, attached to the bottom surface of the desk. And I use these Scotch fasteners. Imagine like Scotch tape, the company Scotch. Imagine like a really, really hard plastic Velcro. So it's adhesive on one side, Velcro on the other, and you can just like, you know, it's basically, imagine like plug and play Velcro. Velcro was already kind of plug and play, but I want to put some on the back of this Raspberry Pi case to where I can like put it on the back of my TV, or I can put it underneath my desk, or I can put it on the wall if I have this other, you know, line of fasteners wherever. And yeah, I can take it to a variety of areas and have it be secure and not just, you know, the floating board with the cables, which could be dangerous. But yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to it. And we will, Martin and I both, report back on that soon.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Let's go to you backup, right? Backup your data?
Not as often. I have to be honest with you, not as often as I should. But right now, yes.
Okay. Well, that's good. Anybody who doesn't backup their data, they need a bumper sticker that says backup your data. You got to backup your data. Got to backup your data. But I came across, just in case you don't backup your data and you do like to hit the delete button, like if that's the one key on your keyboard that's all worn out, the delete button, I came across a great article from Unix Men where they talk about how to make a folder undeletable. So you kind of lock the folder down. And I thought that was a great idea. It's using an application called Chatter, Chattr, for Linux. And then BSD has its own kind of offshoot that you can do, but you can you kind of lock the folder down so that way it doesn't get deleted. You can and then unlock it, but so you have to lock it and then unlock it. But I thought it was a great idea. Even if you even if you do backup your data, having kind of a lockdown folder, maybe it's important financial items or something like that. That even though it does get backup, you don't want it to get deleted. Maybe it's a NAS. Something like that. This would be a great way to go ahead and lock down the folder and keep people from deleting it and keep yourself from accidentally highlighting it because, you know, the mouse will jump or you'll hit the wrong button not thinking about it. But I just thought it was a great little tool and something that I'm gonna work on putting in kind of my toolbox of ideas and make sure I don't delete anything.
This is very cool now that I'm reading it. What I will say in my experience and hopefully... Those of you who have good backup solutions set up, it's really all about the preparation because any good backup solution should be 99% prep and then 1% just like start. If you know, you can automate backups, you can set up all sorts of hardware and software to do it, set up countermeasures as I would consider something like this, but this would be very great, good, especially for like your family desktop with which you have many users. if especially if they're able to navigate from, you know, user directory to user directory, because you don't want someone accidentally getting in and messing up your media. If you guys are, for whatever reason, only using literally one desktop environment at home, like if it's a, like it's a guest machine, you don't have separate logins, this would also be very useful. A lot of good uses for this. And with a project I have set up, you know, my son will be utilizing a desktop for the first time soon, and God knows what he's going to be doing once he starts learning how to use a mouse and navigate and click and drag and do all that stuff. So yeah, this is a very cool little item.
Yeah, because backups are used, you know, you want your backup to be your last resort. That's your, you know, that's kind of your backup plan. That's not your primary way to keep your data safe. You know, the reason it's called backup, not first up.
That's right, yeah.
Front up? Anyways.
In fact, here's a little teaser. I meant to talk to you about this before the show, but I have a backup idea that I want to talk to you, specifically because we live in close proximity to each other. So stay tuned.
We're going to drive floppy disks back and forth to each other?
No, zip disks.
Oh, zip disk.
Yeah.
Awesome. I'm going to have to get myself a serial port now.
You're darn right. Well, yeah. I'll tell you how I do it. Let's just say monoprice was key in that implementation in my day-to-day.
Hey, you know, I mean, there's multiple different ways to back up. You know, Steve Gibson, you've probably heard of Steve Gibson.
Of course, yeah.
He actually backs up his data on a hard drive and mails it to his mom in a different town. So he uses his mother as an actual physical. He backs up his data locally and off-site, but another one of his stuff that he does is he actually backs it up. He gives it to a relative on a physical device.
Yeah, I had a buddy who, he still does this. He has a safety deposit box at two different financial institutions, to where he has two external drives. Well, he has four, I should say, four external drives. I should say two pairs. So let's say pair A and pair B. So once a month, he'll do a full backup to each of the 3 terabyte drives, right? And then take them to his local financial institution, swap them out from the last month's drives, and then bring those other ones home. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yep. Because it's secure. I mean, as long as, you know, the bank doesn't lose your drives, but...
That's true.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say he's extra paranoid. He's just that careful.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, lots of good ways to have good solutions to back up your data.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. So speaking, and this is funny how I kind of lined up with the notes. If you want to, speaking of altering your OS to do specific things for you, I found an awesome article today, and I just happened to have this way of I've been reading a tech novel which mentioned this steganography. It's a type of encryption. So for me to come across this article, like that word stood out, and I was like, oh hey, this is cool. But this article that we're bringing in, all the links will be in the show notes, is how to hide files inside an image in Linux. Which, if you think about the things that you could do with this, it's pretty amazing. Not only for like cool, you know, like secret backup purposes or whatever, but there are good positive ways to do this. But then you also have to think of the flip side. You know, there are nefarious ways to use this. You know, especially how people get infected through, you know, downloading that funny GIF that everybody's, you know, sending around. Oh, did you see where that cat jumped into that pie? And someone put a bumper sticker on it or whatever. And then they download the GIF like, oh, isn't that cute? But inside that image file, there might have been some nefarious things. But this, I have yet to try it. I'm going to try it tonight, and I will report on the next show. But details ways where, yeah, you can put secret files inside an image. Now, I wouldn't say do your whole backup, because if you do a properties check on a photo of an apple and it's 37 gigs, it might be a little, you know, a little obvious as to what might have happened there.
A 400 gig picture of a cat.
Right. Was that picture taken in the future with some huge camera?
Oh, it's HD.
Yeah, way HD.
No, this does look cool. I have never, you know, I've heard about steganography, read books about it. Not specifically on steganography itself. That's a little above my understanding. But just this looks really cool, and it looks really simple. It's a great walkthrough. I'm definitely going to try it and see what I can do. But yes, anytime you're doing something like this, it could be used for good and it could be used for bad.
Mm-hmm. I have to correct you quickly. It's steganography.
Oh, I apologize.
Yeah. When I think of stenography, I always think of the film Airplane. With the stenographer in the courtroom. You don't remember that? It was
I think I do now.
Okay.
Because
traditionally, stenographer is always just sitting there, like almost as if they're just a fixture of the courtroom, you know, like a pillar or something. They're sitting there just, you know,
right,
just recording everything that goes. But the stenographer at Airplane, he was just really, really flamboyant and moving his hands and arms wildly and being very happy that he was recording what was being said. It was hilarious. So.
That's right. And this brings up an article. This makes me think of a movie I just saw, actually just a couple weeks ago, called Along Came a Spider. I don't know if you saw it. It's a Morgan Freeman movie. Anyways, if you haven't seen it, they do this. It's a like a private school for like diplomat kids and senators kids. And so there's some hidden, they communicate back and forth via this, via the word you chose that I can't say.
Oh, wow. Well, when I have big words that I need to say, I always try to break it up and make like a little mental link. So when I see steganography, I think of stegosaurus. So steg and then steganography.
I don't think there's a stegosaurus.
Stegosaurus? Am I thinking of another dinosaur? Don't ruin my thing here, Obando. There is to a stegosaurus. I'll find a picture of a stegosaurus and I'll send you some encrypted files.
It's spelled differently, but yes, it's the one with the horns on the back of it, like the plates,
yeah,
with the big and the big tail, yeah, with the spiky things. Yeah, it's spelled a little differently, but yeah, you're right.
Okay.
There is a stegosaurus.
All right, you shattered my whole world there.
Well, I'm thinking I'm going to put a picture inside of a picture of a stegosaurus, or put an image, man. You know.
Ooh. It could be an image of Morgan Freeman, but really it's an image of Stegosaurus.
That's right.
Okay. So yeah, please check out this link in the show notes if you were looking. If you just want to test it out, just to have the files be secure. Yeah, especially if you were sharing files with someone, or just wanted to try it out just to say you did it. Check it out.
Right. So this week, Skype released version 4.2 for Linux, which had taken them a while. They had been really up to date with the Microsoft, but they hadn't done anything with Linux for a long time. And so this week, everybody said, yay, Skype 4.2 was released. Came up with some major fixes. Some people say major, some people say minor, depending on, I guess, your priorities. But everybody's very excited that this came out. So I wanted to throw that out there, that if you haven't updated your Skype and you do use Skype, you can update to the latest version 4.2. Now, I have talked about this past in Geeksters, is that Microsoft is reading Skype chats. So be careful. So you're talking about using stenography. Maybe send a link of a picture that has text in it through your Skype, so when Microsoft reads it, they only get a picture of Morgan Freeman and a dinosaur.
Yes, at the end of the day, if you Skype, the word Skype is just synonymous with video chat.
Right.
No matter who you are, you know. Grandson to grandpa, you know, across the board. But what a lot of people forget or don't associate it with is the fact that it is a Microsoft product.
And it was at one time supposed to be point-to-point encryption. So a lot of people were very excited about it because Google has now come along. But it was kind of the precursor. It was the way to be able to do voice and encryption to privately send messages. And now that it's been proven that Microsoft is... they're more than willing to go ahead under the claims of making sure that you're not sending any spam or that people aren't getting any spam to be able to read your messages. So.
Yeah. And that's why I don't use it anymore. Well, but
it has its purposes.
No, it does. It does.
But
and
maybe if you're going to Skype with somebody, maybe write down the links on a piece of paper and show that to them.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know. Just an option. You may get tired depending on how things are, or just use BitTorrent Sync.
Oh man, yeah, we could go on to that forever. That's a whole other tangent we can cover at Sherry's.
If you do use Skype, Skype did release a new update, 4.2 for Linux. So,
yes. And if you want, speaking of this tech novel, and this is the last time I'll mention it, but in this novel I'm reading, they're talking about having your traffic or your online presence monitored. And the way that it's being monitored by this organization is the fact that if you're using up so much bandwidth or if you're transferring X type of files on a more consistent basis than everyone else. So if you want to somewhat diffuse Microsoft's ability to track voice, if you flood Skype with more of this, with more traffic than that they which then have to monitor, it's a way to kind of make it less effective. But I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. What what do you mind me asking? What novel?
Oh, it's Little Brother from Cory Doctorow.
Oh, I have not. I've heard of the author, but I have not heard of the novel.
It's a young adult novel, and I didn't think I'd ever read one, to be honest with you. But I heard a very good talk of his at a book reading of his about his friend Aaron Swartz, who, of course, a lot of us know, who passed away in January. But yeah, I'd heard about him too, and I was finally compelled. I was like, I got to give this book a try, and it's really, really cool. I don't want to spoil the plot or anything, but it gets into some very cool real life tools and things that you can do to subvert detection, to transfer files secretly. But it's also a pretty compelling story along with it. So yeah, check it out.
That sounds really good. I'll have to.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll read it on our trip to OLF.
Totally should.
Then I'll be paranoid.
Don't do that. Yet it is getting more gears spinning in my head, but I'm not paranoid.
Yet.
Not yet.
Wait till you finish the book. I heard the ending chapter.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks. Spoiler alert. Moving on. I was reading this too, and we're seeing a lot of these little USB computers pop up all over the place. It can just be a simple media center device. There are little ones that run Android, ones that run Linux, ones that literally just tiny, tiny sticks, which are full computers. And we're seeing also little gaming platforms come up on these things. So we're seeing all these devices. And of course, because the market is so saturated, it has to be that little unique spin to make one stand out over the other. And I read something really cool today about this product called the Devon Scepter. And the Devon Scepter is engineered in a specific way to turn any HDMI display into a hosted cloud desktop. Now, I'm sure that, you know, if you got the right software, that you could do this with a variety of these devices. But this product looks really neat. What they're doing and what they're suggesting, it's a $99 device. It has an ARM processor and runs a Linux-based OS, but it is really designed to let you log into a remote server running virtual desktop software. So think about this for a minute. You're traveling, let's say we're at OLF. I could have this thing with me, get a USB extension cable, or excuse me, HDMI extension cable, because if you ever try to plug in any of these little devices into an HDMI port on a big TV, if they're sticking right out, it can be a little cumbersome. In this picture, they're using an extension cable, which I think is cool, and would also aid you if you were to do the mounting thing like I was talking about earlier. But think about it. I could be at OLF. I could plug this device into the monitor, into the HDMI-enabled television in our hotel room, and log into a machine that I have back at home and be using it through this device as if I was right in front of it.
So this device specifically, it itself is not a media center, but it talks to a media center?
No, you can use it to log in remotely to other machines. So it's, yeah, okay. And you could do a variety of things with that. You know, it's kind of the base idea.
Cool.
But I was just trying to illustrate the fact that a lot of the ones we're seeing now are for specific purposes. For instance, when the Raspberry Pi first came out, like a lot of people were thinking media center, like $35 media center, this is going to be great. But if you take a step back and see what's been done before and really think, well, what else can we do with these devices, these little low-powered machines? What other things can we accomplish for less money that we're already paying a lot for now? I mean, think about this in like for a traveling businessman or for I mean, to be implemented across a company, something like this, if it had to be hardware based rather than software, to be shared like on a laptop or something. I think it's a pretty neat little device.
It is. That is cool. I may have to look at something like that when I, you know, down the future, because those little things like that, interest me. And I think, you know, Dor has his little one that he uses and it takes it places. And you know, we're moving away from having to carry around a you know, if things are getting smaller. You know, we don't have to carry around a 15-inch laptop anymore. We can carry around a little thing that fits on your keychain almost, and there's your computer. So
yep,
mobile computing is pretty fascinating, and it's, you know, every week, you know, it sounds like every week I'm hearing something new come up. And so it's happening so fast that by the time you go, oh, I have enough money now to buy that part. Well, that part's pretty old. I'm sorry, but that was so 2 weeks ago. Now we're onto the newest, you know, the newest gadget and the newest little tinier processor, bigger, faster, smaller.
Yep.
It's pretty cool.
And you, we spoke before the show, you're in the market potentially for a new laptop.
I am.
I'll probably be getting one, hopefully around Christmas time, cross my fingers. And more, I would say the number one thing I'm looking for in a laptop right now is to have it be nice and compact. Because when I think about super intensive things that I would do on a machine, chances are I'm not going to need to do it on the road based on my personal use, the things I would do, you know, on the go. Right now I have a System 76, a 14-inch laptop. It's great, but I've already lugged it around with me to two fests, and I got to tell you, my back would have been better if I didn't have to. So the Chromebook has helped that to a certain extent, but it is it's a somewhat limited device. So yeah, having all sorts of new tiny mobile solutions for your day-to-day, no matter what it is, and seeing products like this pop up would be neat. And also, another benefit to something like this, too, is the fact that it's not just a base device which you install software on to complete a goal. It is pre-set up for you. Therefore, if you had customers that had a need for this device, you could have a great resale option.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't, you know, I'm curious to see. I haven't seen very many of them kind of for sale. Like, you look on eBay, and like it doesn't have a high turnover rate yet. People are using them for multiple different things because they're so cheap, and they can, you know, one can be your local media center, one could be your, you know, interface to flip on the lights when you walk in the home, you know. So there with the price point makes it really easy to tinker with.
Yeah,
and that's pretty exciting. Speaking of tinkering, we up at the Linux Fest Northwest, they brewed beer using Raspberry Pis. Everything was automated through Raspberry Pis. Temperature control, the whole thing. And they just did it. They did also root beer, too. And that was good root beer.
But I would like to announce that I'm going to be at Linux Fest Northwest 2014. Right now, because of that.
And hopefully the bridge will be fixed by then. So,
was there problems with the bridge?
The bridge just north of us collapsed. Dai-Fi Bridge collapsed into the river. We'll talk about that afterwards, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that happened last night. So okay. No injuries, no deaths, everybody's fine, but a major bridge over Interstate 5 runs from Canada all the way down to Mexico along the western coast. A bridge in Washington collapsed, so you can't go across that bridge anymore.
Wow. Well, I don't get the paper, I don't read the local news, and I don't have television, so that's why I didn't know that.
I'm glad you didn't head up that way.
Oh yeah, me too. Not during that debacle. Jeez. No. Okay. No. Well, speaking of cheap mobile solutions, Martin, what's this next?
Well, it's not so cheap though. That's the only problem.
I know.
Speaking of mobile solutions, I came across that TechCrunch did a review on the Raspberry Pixel. I'm sorry, the Chromebook Pixel. Okay. It's a $1,200 Raspberry Pi. It glitters. It's bedazzled. Yeah. No, the Chromebook Pixel, I apologize for that. So it was a good, he kind of goes through the pros and the cons. I'm assuming it's he, I may have misspoken, but he kind of goes through pros and cons of it. And then at the very end, they talk about, well, what if you're a developer? Would you use this? What if you're a designer? Would you use this? What if you had this kind of a job, a pro, you know, would you use this? And it kind of pretty much came across to this long list of him going, it's a really, really nice Chromebook. The touch is very nice. It's pretty snappy, but really, it's still just a glorified Chromebook. And while that, you know, while that kind of is kind of one of those meh type reviews, what it does allow, and this brings up something that maybe you can expand on. You and Dora talked about this last week regarding hacking your Chromebook to put Linux on it.
Mm-hmm. There are a variety of ways, three well-known ways, which I know right now, to get Ubuntu or, let's see, what was the other one? Bodhi Linux onto either the Samsung or the Acer Chromebook. And there are some intruded methods. There are some, I would say, side door, almost native installations where you can kind of flip back and forth between them. There's a variety of ways to do that, but you're still... The one limitation of those both of those devices share is the fact that it's low-powered hardware. You do have these lower-powered CPUs, the smaller hard drives, which isn't necessarily a huge deal, considering you're not going to... If speaking of backups, if you have all of your media on your Chromebook, then you're doing something wrong, because if you lose that thing, you're done. So backup, especially with that year of Google Drive you get. But the one limitation to getting full-blown Linux on these things is the hardware. The Chromebook Pixel solves that, because I believe the base model, because I think there are two or three available for this, the base model has a Core i5 in it.
It does.
Yeah. Which is going to, you know, it's going to run like a champ as far as, I mean, it's so awesome to even run Unity. Whoa. I just heard a rim shot in the back. But the one of the bigger sort of things that was brought up when this was announced was the fact that, hey, we finally have a Chromebook with really good hardware to run Linux on it. But if you're spending upwards of $1,300 just to throw Linux on a Chromebook, then I just can't justify it. It's a beautiful machine, don't get me wrong. And I've spoken to its pros just based on some reviews I read for it in the past. But it's nice to see Google come out with a machine at the other end of the spectrum, not a tiny, low-powered, cheap device, but something on the other end. And to have this review on it, I've read it earlier, and I'm kind of looking through it again. It doesn't, in its current state, suit specific types of jobs very well. It's still, it's running Chrome OS, which I overall enjoy. I have no qualms about it, other than the fact that if it's all you know, and it's all that you have, you still are at this moment in time somewhat limited. Right. But if we see more affordable versions of this, you know, like a sub $800 Chrome device with a decent hardware in it, then that can be something that I think will be more adopted by the general public, as not only, hey, this is an affordable laptop and I can throw Linux on it and I can do these other things if I so choose because it's now my machine, then I think that this has to be hopefully what they're working toward, to have, you know, that low, mid, and high level device available for everyone, not just the person who only has $249 to spend on a laptop and the person who is only wants to spend $1,300 just to have a really nice Chromebook.
Right. Yeah, what it does very well, and it's very beautiful, and it handles very nicely. It just doesn't do a lot very well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I want to throw it out there. I think the last time I actually hosted with you, we talked about the Chromebooks.
And we did, yeah.
We did, and I just wanted to, you know, people may have heard by that time that we've implemented at the school that I work at 32 Chromebooks. They've been implemented. They're used all the time, and the students really like them. So for an educational facility, they get used all the time. And they're really good. But they're using the $249 one, not the Pixel.
Yeah, the Samsung one. Yeah, yeah. You guys didn't buy a battery of Pixels.
Right. No.
Oh, darn. No,
sorry.
That would have been an impressive little storage rack, I'm telling you what.
It would have. They're already, yeah. Unfortunately, they're fighting with bandwidth issues right now, so we're gonna get that resolved over the summer. But
oh, okay.
So, Cody, if you had if you just had a room that had over $5 million, or sorry, 5 million Legos in it, what would you do with that?
I had a room with 5 million of a variety of size and colors. I assume.
Of course, not just one color.
Oh, geez. Wow, you're kind of putting me on the spot here. My first impression, the first thing that comes to my mind is to take a while to make a very intricate home out of them. If I had enough, I would love to build a home made out of Legos. I don't know how cool that would be, but that's just what I come up with on the spot. Did you have something cooler?
You know, Do you know that they're actually called master builders? Like somebody has a job that builds things out of Legos. How cool is that? That's pretty cool.
No.
Anyways, 5,335,220 Legos for a full-size X-Wing fighter.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's 23 tons. And it is ranked as the world's largest Lego build right now. And it's actually in New York. It's at Times Square, so if anybody's on the East Coast, head to New York. Like today, it's a three-day weekend. You got time. Go check out the largest X-Wing fighter. It looks absolutely amazing.
Oh, my God. I didn't look at this before the show, and I'm this awesomeness. It's like it's to scale. It's like R2 is in it.
Yeah, R2. Actually, technically, it's only it's 2 feet shorter than to scale. But you know, but yes, there is an R2. There is an R2 D2 involved in it.
See, here's the thing, and I have an updated answer to your question here in a second after I say this. When I was a kid at daycare, my babysitter had the tubs of Legos, and I would always build many different Voltrons from the Legos because they had the right colors and shapes, and I thought of a blocky character that I could build, Voltron would be the easiest, or one of the GoBots or whatever. Or like Optimus Prime, but I didn't have enough gray, so I couldn't. Yeah, he didn't look right in my mind, so I took him apart. But this is amazing. But if you think about like building something just even on a tabletop out of Legos, the rough edges that you're going to see based on what you have. I mean, if you look at some of the Lego model kits that you can buy, I mean, it's pretty amazing what they can do with those little pieces, but it's almost like looking at like a low resolution image because you can see, you know, the blocky corners because you're building out of blocks, literally. If you look at this thing, based on how large the entire construct is and how many pieces they're using, I mean, if you relaxed your eyes a bit, you would swear that it was an actual X-Wing.
Yeah.
This thing is awesome.
It is absolutely amazing. Over 17,000 man hours to put this together.
Oh, 32
people. It took. It's you know, you look at a Lego thing, something like this, and you go, okay, they just put it on a boat or they shipped it over. How did they do it? Considering the weight of this thing, it took. They had to break it down into 34 pieces, and it took 2 boats, 2 months from to go across the sea to get it into New York. So this isn't just something that somebody threw together. This is absolutely amazing. And I don't live anywhere next to New York. You don't live anywhere next to New York. But it's as soon as it's done in New York, it's going to be heading down to Legoland, which is in Southern California. So I'm thinking maybe a road trip just to go see a 23-ton X-Wing.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So my updated answer would be a Lego Millennium Falcon.
Oh. Maybe that's next.
Yeah, it's got to be. It better be. I'll say that right now. Yeah, when I was in high school, we had a draft. I took drafting, and I was using AutoCAD at the time, and I did a full internal detailed project on it wasn't the Millennium Falcon, but the Millennium Falcon is a Corellian freighter, and I did a modified Corellian freighter with more weapons, and that still, if I'm not mistaken, is still posted in that room at that high school.
Very cool.
Yeah, so I have a deep relationship with that ship, and yeah, to see something like that, to see like a Corellian freighter built out of Legos like that size, like I'm looking at this thing and it's awesome. Like that's what comes to mind now.
Yeah, yeah, we'll have the links in the show notes, but there's schematics how they built it, and that because Lego has its own CAD program and tells you how to build things. So I mean this is like probably very proprietary information that they don't let out other than to their master builders, and that's an actual job. People are master builder Lego.
Where do I apply for that?
I don't know. It looks like you may have to move to the Czech Republic, but
I'm fine with that.
You know, if you like borscht and maybe cold winters, but you get to mess with Legos all day long.
Jeez.
So we'll put a link in the show notes, but it looks pretty cool. This is pretty awesome.
So I'm not meaning to put you on the spot with this question, and don't get defensive, please, but how does this relate to Linux?
Well, Linux is very geeky and open source, and aren't Legos open source? I mean, can't you...
Technically, yeah, okay, I mean, there you go. See, you're bringing it around.
You can do what you want with Legos, you can do what you want with Linux.
There you go.
If it, if it doesn't exist, build it.
I would rather address it on the show now and have you answer than have someone address me after the fact or post something in the forums going, excuse me, in episode 134 you guys are talking about the Lego X-Wing, and I would like you to answer how that relates to Linux, your response, please, and then have to come up with some creative way of explaining it. But you just did that, so thank you very much.
That's what I do. I bring it around. Bumper sticker. Bring it around.
Okay. See, okay, this is going to lead into my sort of last thing I want to talk about. OLF 2013. A lot of you last year followed us. We created a special Google event for OLF 2013. We posted, we did post it. The Google event at that time was a nice way to, for instance, to have me snap a photo with my phone, have it automatically uploaded to my Google account, but also to be shared inside the event. So if we think of the advances with Google Plus now, OLF 2013 is going to be that much better because of the things that we can share while we're there with you folks at home. What I would ask is that if you are thinking about going to OLF 2013, definitely send us an email or hit me up on Google Plus. It's less, can you believe this, Martin? It's less than 4 months away now.
Really?
It's less than 4 months.
I checked plane tickets today again. Still up there.
Yep. Yeah, but, me too. Martin and I will be flying out to Maryland together to drive to Columbus with Dor and potentially Jonathan Nato. So yeah, we're keeping our eye on plane ticket prices right now because we're ready to pull the trigger. But they're especially inflated this weekend because of Memorial Day.
So. Oh, that's true. I did just look today. So
yep, yeah, they jumped up like $40 from yesterday. I was like, whoa. But let's just say that, I don't think I've spoken about this on the show, but the very limited things that we planned for to do at OLF last year made the experience that much better, not only with the people who were actually there, but with the people that we got to communicate with while we were there and the resulting content from it, of which I will say was limited. This year, we've got some very cool stuff planned. I don't want to get into it too much, but I will say, and I will commit to this, if we are able to somehow distribute merchandise, we will make a Martin Rambo Obando themed bumper sticker. I will commit to that.
It's just like me with my ripping my shirt off in a six pack.
There you go.
I'm holding a microphone or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you gotta have the red headband on with a knife in your teeth.
Oh. Well, that's just Tuesday. I take it out when I talk on Geeksters. And I put it back in.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I mean, you know, it's an acquired skill to talk with it with a knife in your teeth and be able to podcast.
Yes.
Very cool. But yeah, if you guys are excited for OLF, definitely hit us up. We're going to have, let's just say we got some good things coming. We'll talk more about it as certain details roll in. I have something very special planned, and I'm just going to leave it at that.
Oh, I don't even know these things. That's okay.
You don't even know these things.
I don't want to know. I want to know. It's like Christmas morning. This will be my first OLF. I've met you and I have met in person. I have, you know, talked to Dora, talked to Mitch, talked to Jonathan. Most of these people never even seen, other than through video. I'm all giddy to actually give these people high fives and talk to them. And you know, the first thing I think is brothers don't shake hands. Brothers got a hug. So,
That's right. You
know, I'm excited for it. My wife's already got the time off. I'm looking at tickets. It's not an if. It's done deal for me. So yep. I just got to buy the tickets, saving up the money for the hotel room. And we've already had conversations about what to eat and what not to eat, which is eat everything, don't eat nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's an all-carb weekend.
All-carb weekend.
But I understand that people have limitations, and some of you might not be able to go, but we're still going to go out of our way to make sure that those who can't go but want to experience what it's like, we're going to cater and have some cater to those folks and have some good content for you, not only while we're there, but definitely more afterwards. So stay tuned for that.
That sounds great. Looking forward to that.
Very cool. Right now, we're actually not going to do any emails again this week because Dora's gone. We've gotten some great emails the past couple weeks, and I think a lot of you are sending those in. However, they are some detailed questions, and of which I don't think that Martin isn't capable of answering them, but a lot of them were addressed to myself and Dora, or Dora specifically, about a variety of things, so I would rather do them when he comes back. Our next show, when he comes back, we will cover all of them, sort of clear the chutes, and have those completely read on the next show to start fresh. And then that way we can take the time to answer them in depth. So thank you for sending them. Please continue to send in emails and voicemails to 7076-PODNUT. Martin, where can we find you online?
Find me on Google Plus. I'm Martin Obando. You can get me at my website, martin@obandocomputing.com. I'm Maskill in the forums, so if you see me hanging out in the Podnuts forums or the Geeksters forums, the IRC, well, I'm Maskill in the IRC and in the forums, so that's me.
Very cool. Thank you once again for coming on the show. I'm excited for it.
Now, are we doing another one together coming up?
Yeah, Martin and I will be doing another episode in just a few days, so we'll get some more things lined up for that. If you guys have like you said, you know, contacting Google Plus, I've been doing a lot of communicating with our listeners on Google Plus. Don't ever hesitate to send me a message. It might take me a little while to get back to you through Google Talk or now Google Hangouts, but don't ever hesitate to ask me a question or to just say hi. I love the feedback, love the interaction, and it starts some great conversations. So I'm open to you. Contact me as you want.
Same here. And of course, anybody out there, any bumper sticker creators, I'll definitely answer you before any other people.
All right. I'm going to make that happen for you, and it's going to be a good day.
I don't know what I'm going to say, though.
I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Got to find something witty.
Okay.
I love my pie? No. I don't know. We'll figure something out.
Yes. All right. So as always, please visit the ACF.co, the Accessible Computing Foundation, run by our good friend, Jonathan Nato, who is bringing computing to those who may have otherwise been left behind, those people who with disabilities. Please visit them. You can become a regular contributor to them for as low as $2 a month, and they use that money in all sorts of development areas in order to bring this technology into the hands of those people who desperately need it. Along those lines, Jonathan Nato also has his own Linux distribution called Sonar, which aids people with disabilities to using their computer, and it addresses a variety of issues. It's based on Ubuntu. It's a fantastic distro. Please check that out if you have someone in the need. And it's also, I mean, anyone can use it, but it is specifically geared to assist those people with disabilities. Please send in emails to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. We would love to hear your feedback, and we will be addressing emails on the show regularly from now on. And if you're already doing some shopping on Amazon, please use the podnuts.com/Amazon link, and the network will get a small commission based on those things that you were already buying anyway. We also have a /Newegg and /eBay link for the same purpose. And please check out podnuts.com/deals. We have a variety of products up there with which we give our Podnuts listeners specific discounts for. And I got to tell you, we got a lot of more stuff and a lot of really good stuff coming to that link. So you will want to keep your eye on it for sure.
I think I'm going to use the podnuts.com/Amazon link to buy my own little X-Wing Fighter Lego kit.
Oh, wow. Here's the thing. Now I have these images in my head. I have this shelf above my desk right now. I'm pointing to it. It's not even there yet on camera, which you guys aren't even going to see because we're not recording this video, but I have all of these like mini video game character statues up there because I want to have kind of this thing to look at. And now I want a Lego Millennium Falcon, and I'm going to bill Obando Computing for it because it's your fault.
Oh. That's all right.
That's okay.
That's all right.
Okay.
We'll figure it out. Maybe we'll go halfsies.
Yeah, okay. All right.
All right.
Thank you again, Martin, on the show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I am Cody Cooper signing off. And please remember, Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.